Okay, so you know we've talked before about the American Revolution and religion, but you've brought some pretty interesting stuff this time with Dr. Green's lecture, and all the stuff about American Unitarianism and how that kind of rose up in the wake of all the changes. And you know we've got this mission, I guess you could say, to kind of see how the revolution really shook things up for different churches, and you know, and then to trace the origins of American Unitarianism and to really figure out what they actually believed.
And hopefully find some cool connections.
Some interesting connections along the way. All right, well, so how about we jump right in with you know, we talk about the revolution and religion, but like what were the actual impacts on the churches?
Yeah, so it's really interesting because the revolution, it wasn't just a political earthquake, you know. It really did kind of reshape the religious landscape of America, and it really forced Americans to rethink not just their political loyalties, but also their spiritual identity and even, you know, the structures of their faith communities.
Okay, so like for a specific example, Dr. Green talked about how the Anglicans kind of took a hit in terms of numbers, and it makes sense, right? Because of their ties back to the British Crown.
Exactly. You know, in a time of such deep political division, your religious affiliation, it really did become intertwined with your political loyalties. And being associated with the Church of England really, for many patriots, carried a, you know, a huge stigma. You know, it was a big deal.
So then on the flip side, we have the Congregationalists, who it seems were like largely supportive of the revolution, and they probably gained ground because of that. But then you have like the Baptists and Presbyterians and Quakers, and Dr. Green suggests they weren't as like dramatically affected by the revolution. And it's interesting, even thinking back to those bicentennial displays in Faneuil Hall in 76, they even touched on this.
Well, yeah, and I mean, it makes you wonder about, you know, the nature of these denominations, maybe their structures or even their, you know, core theology allowed for a wider range of political views without causing these big rifts. Yeah, maybe their identities weren't so closely tied to the monarchy like the Anglicans were.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, so one thing that really stood out to me in all this was universalism and how it was kind of emerging during this period. I mean, it's not something you always think about when you think about the revolution, but it sounds like it really started to gain traction.
It did.
The basic idea, as Dr. Green explained it, is like universal salvation. Everyone's going to be saved. No hell, you know?
Yeah, it's a very optimistic theology, and you can see how that would have resonated at a time like this. You know, the nation's kind of going through this trauma of war. And so this vision of, you know, this universal reconciliation, this idea that we're all going to be okay, that must have been really comforting.
And it's like the opposite of what the Calvinists were saying.
Exactly. You know, the Calvinists, with their emphasis on judgment and limited salvation, this was, you know, a direct counter to that. And it's interesting that that John Murray guy came over from Britain in 1770 to spread this message.
That is interesting. And it wasn't just like one unified idea either within universalism was.
No, it wasn't.
There were like three main perspectives that Dr. Green talked about. So the first one was that Christ's death fully atoned for everyone's sins. And that seems like a direct answer to that whole Calvinist, you know, elect thing.
It is. You know, they were pushing back against this theology that felt so exclusive. And, you know, in the context of this new nation that was all about liberty and equality, it must have felt really unfair. You know, the idea that God had already chosen who was going to be saved, regardless of what you did in life. And then the second view within universalism was this idea of immediate entry into God's presence upon death. So no judgment. You die and you're right there with God.
So that one's definitely appealing.
I mean, who wouldn't want that?
Okay, so then the third view was this idea of like a post-death purification for those who had sinned. You know, not like eternal damnation, but more like a spiritual cleansing before you could finally be with God.
Yeah, it's a more nuanced view for sure. You know, they're trying to reconcile the fact that humans aren't perfect with this ultimate goal of
It's
redemption.
like they're trying to have their cake and eat it too.
Well, yeah, I mean, it reflects the intellectual kind of dynamism of the time. You know, people were really re-examining these old doctrines through the lens of reason and individual experience.
And they even had that formal convention in Philadelphia in 1790.
They did.
So that shows they were getting organized and gaining influence.
Right after the war.
Yeah. Okay, so that's kind of a good overview of how the revolution impacted religion. But Dr. Green also talked about church attendance during this time.
He did.
And how we need to be careful not to go to like two extremes.
Right.
So like the first one is this idea that everybody was super religious back then and went to church all the time.
Yeah, it's easy to romanticize the past.
Yeah.
But it's just not accurate.
Right.
I mean, there were deists and, you know, all sorts of people who weren't really into organized religion.
Yeah, but then on the other hand, no, you can't just look at official church membership numbers.
Exactly.
Dr. Green says we got to remember that a lot of people who weren't officially members still went to church,
uh-huh,
like at their local congregational or Anglican church or whatever.
Right. So, you know, the church was still this important part of the community.
Right.
Even for people who weren't members.
Right.
It was a place for social interaction.
Yeah.
You know, a sense of belonging.
Yeah, like a community center.
Exactly.
Okay, so the stat Dr. Green gives is that around 3/5 of the population regularly attended church around 1780.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like there might have been a dip during the war itself.
Yeah, probably.
But then it increased again afterward.
Which makes sense. Yeah. I mean, people looking for stability and comfort after a time of upheaval.
Right, right. And he even hinted at the Second Great Awakening coming up later on.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm definitely looking forward to diving into that.
Me too.
Okay, so we've talked about the revolution and its impact on religion. Now let's focus on American Unitarianism.
Right.
So first of all, what is Unitarianism?
Well, Dr. Green defines it as this rejection of the Trinity.
Okay.
And a strong belief in the oneness of God.
So a strict monotheism.
Exactly.
And it turns out the idea of denying the Trinity wasn't totally new, was it?
No, not at all.
Some earlier figures in church history had questioned it, too.
Right. But what's significant here is that this belief was becoming a real movement.
Okay.
You know, a distinct organized group.
Right.
And the Trinity, you know, the idea of God as Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, that's been a core belief for centuries.
Right.
So to deny it is a pretty big deal.
Yeah. Okay. So Dr. Green traces the origins of modern Unitarianism back to the 16th century and Michael Servetus,
right,
who argued with Calvin about the Trinity.
Right.
And it's important to remember that Calvin didn't actually burn Servetus at the stake.
No, he didn't.
It was the civil authorities in Geneva, yeah, who did that.
Right. To kind of maintain order.
Right.
You know, heresy back then wasn't just a theological disagreement.
Right.
It was seen as a threat to society.
Okay. And then fast forward to 17th century England, and we have John Biddle, who really started to organize Unitarian thought.
Right.
And this seems to have fit right in with the whole rationalistic thinking in England at the time.
Yeah, the Enlightenment.
Yeah.
You know, with its emphasis on reason.
Right.
That really created a space,
yeah,
for ideas that prioritize logic over tradition.
Yeah.
And Unitarianism.
Yeah.
With its focus on, you know, one God.
Yeah.
Fit in perfectly with that.
Right.
And the movement actually grew through missionaries. And they even converted some Baptists and Presbyterians.
Wow.
Yeah. And then there's Dr. Joseph Priestley,
yeah,
a scientist who was a Unitarian.
So you've got science and religion all mixed up here.
Yeah. It's fascinating how those two things were interacting.
Yeah.
And then in 1813, Unitarianism was officially recognized in England.
Wow. So that's a pretty big deal.
It is a big step for the movement.
Yeah. Okay. So it sounds like early Unitarians in England, including Priestley, they still really valued the Bible.
They did.
Even while they were wrestling with things like the incarnation and miracles.
Right.
They were trying to find biblical support for their beliefs.
Yeah. But over time, there was this shift.
Towards what?
Towards relying more on human reason,
okay,
to understand religious truth.
So they were moving away from the Bible.
Some were saying we don't even need the Bible anymore.
Wow.
Yeah, and this caused a bit of a split in the movement between the biblical Unitarians, who still valued the Bible, and the rational Unitarians, who were all about reason.
Okay.
And eventually the rational Unitarians kind of won out in England.
Interesting. So now we come to America.
Right.
And the first key figure is James Freeman.
Yes.
Who lived from 1759 to 1835.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the pastor at King's Chapel in Boston.
Right there on the Freedom Trail.
Yeah. Which is a pretty famous landmark.
It is.
And in 1785, under Freeman's leadership, King's Chapel became the first official Unitarian church in America.
Which is a huge moment.
It is.
You know, Unitarian ideas had finally made it to America,
right,
and had a real home here.
Right.
And it's interesting that King's Chapel was originally an Anglican church.
Yeah.
and then became Unitarian.
So it's like people were really reassessing their religious affiliations after the revolution?
Exactly.
Okay, so then we have William Ellery Channing,
right,
who Dr. Green calls the father of American Unitarianism.
Yeah, he was a really important figure.
And his church was the Federal Street Congregational Church in Boston.
Which is now Arlington Street Congregational Church.
Right. And there's that statue of him across the street.
There is.
So Channing really helped shape the movement in America.
He did. He was a powerful preacher and writer.
Yeah.
And he really made Unitarianism popular.
And there are three key dates for Channing that Dr. Green highlighted.
Yes.
The first one is 1815.
When his own church became officially Unitarian.
Right. A big moment for sure.
It was.
And then 1816 was the founding of Harvard Divinity School as a Unitarian institution.
Which is kind of amazing when you think about it.
It is, because Harvard started in 1636 as a training ground for Puritan ministers.
It's amazing how things change.
Yeah.
I mean, it really shows you how much the religious landscape of New England had shifted.
Yeah, from Puritanism to Unitarianism.
And Harvard Divinity School is really interesting because it's become this interfaith environment.
Yeah.
They even have an evangelical chair now. But it's important to remember that it was founded as a Unitarian institution.
Right, right. Okay. And the third key date for Channing is 1825.
The founding of the American Unitarian Association.
Right. And there's even a plaque on his old house in Boston on Beacon Hill.
There's a little piece of history right there.
Okay, so the American Unitarian Association really helped to organize all the Unitarian churches.
It gave them a platform, a voice.
Okay, so but Unitarianism wasn't the end of the story, was it?
No, it wasn't.
Dr. Green talked about Transcendentalism,
right,
which came out of Unitarianism, and Ralph Waldo Emerson was like the main guy there.
Right.
And it sounds like it was kind of a rebellion against Unitarianism.
In a way, yes.
Like it was too rational or something.
Some people felt that Unitarianism had become too cold, too intellectual,
right,
and they wanted something more intuitive.
More feeling.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And this really fit with the romantic movement that was happening in Europe.
Okay, so what were the main ideas of Transcendentalism?
Well, Dr. Green outlined three main tenets.
Okay.
So first, they believed that you could discover religious truth through intuition and personal experience.
Right.
Not just through reason or the Bible.
Okay. Interesting.
Second, they believed in this oversoul.
An oversoul? What's that?
This divine presence that's in every person.
Hmm.
And third, they believed that God was present in nature.
Okay.
Almost like a pantheistic view.
So it's like nature worship.
Well, it's more nuanced than that.
Okay.
But yeah, they saw the divine in the natural world.
Right.
And it's important to remember that Transcendentalism wasn't a complete break from Unitarianism.
Okay.
Many Transcendentalists still went to Unitarian churches.
Really?
Yeah. And it was a pretty influential movement, even though it was mostly limited to intellectuals and writers.
Okay, so back to Unitarianism. What did they actually believe?
Well, it's funny because they're often defined by what they don't believe.
Oh, really? Okay, so what don't they believe?
Well, for starters, they don't believe in the Trinity.
Right, right. Yeah. We talked about that.
And they don't believe in the atonement.
The atonement meaning?
The idea that Christ's death was necessary for salvation.
Oh, okay.
They see Jesus more as a good moral teacher.
Like a prophet.
Yeah.
Which reminds me of that C.S. Lewis quote, Lord or lunatic, you know?
Yeah.
Okay, so they don't believe in the Trinity. They don't believe in the atonement. What else?
They also reject original sin.
So they think people are born good.
Well, they don't think people are inherently sinful.
Okay.
And they also reject predestination.
You mean the Calvinist idea?
Right.
That God has already chosen who will be saved?
Exactly.
Okay. So they've got a pretty different view of things than traditional Christians.
Yeah, they do.
But it sounds like they still believe in salvation of some sort.
Right. They believe that salvation comes through living a good moral life.
Okay.
And they still generally believe that everyone will eventually be saved.
Even if they weren't so good in this life.
Right. Even if they need a little purification afterwards.
Okay. So they're not big on the Bible.
Not as the ultimate authority, no.
So what do they see as the ultimate authority?
Human reason and rationality.
So they really are children of the Enlightenment.
Yes, they are.
Dr. Green even suggested that their church services were probably focused on arguments for morality.
Yeah, and promoting the common good.
Interesting. Okay, and lastly, Dr. Green mentioned the 1961 merger of the Unitarians and the Universalists.
Mm-hmm. To form the Unitarian Universalist denomination.
Right, with their headquarters in Boston.
And their own flag.
So it's like those two movements came together.
They did.
Yeah.
You know, they had different origins,
Yeah.
but they found enough common ground to merge,
Yeah, that makes sense.
especially with their shared emphasis on, you know, everyone being saved
Right.
and a more reason-based approach to faith.
Okay, so wrapping things up,
Yeah.
we've gone from the American Revolution and its impacts on all these different churches.
Right. Some struggled, some stayed stable.
Yeah, and we've traced the rise of American Unitarianism.
With all its key figures
Yeah, from Europe to America.
and their core beliefs,
The oneness of God.
the power of reason.
And we even touched on transcendentalism.
It's been a really interesting journey.
It has. So as we end, I want to leave you with a question to think about.
Okay.
You know, Unitarianism is all about reason,
Right.
and transcendentalism is about intuition.
Right.
How do you think those two approaches work when you're trying to understand the world or
Yeah.
figure out your own beliefs?
What are the strengths and
Like, what are
weaknesses?
the pros and
It's
cons?
something to think about for sure.
It is, and I would encourage you to dig deeper
Yeah.
into these figures and movements that we've talked about.
There's a lot to learn.
Thanks for joining us on the deep dive.
Absolutely.
See you next time.
Bye.